All right, it is a football Friday. That means this is the last Friday in July. You know what? 4 weeks from today will be the big football Friday ahead of the start of the season. It is here, whether you like it or not. He is here, whether you like him or you better not. Not like him, Brian Munson from Husker Online. 4 weeks away. Doesn't seem right, does it?
Well, no, especially when it's 106 degrees out down here. I'm ready for a little bit of cooling weather to come off. But, you know, my youngest son had his first football camp yesterday. So it's flying around a little bit, starting to kind of get into the motions a little bit more. So I'm looking forward to some cooler temperatures and some clanging and banging going out there on the football field.
And that is happening today. Well, they're a couple of days away from putting on pads. But we're seeing in training camps, it just kind of snuck up on us a little bit, but football is here, so that's what we will discuss. And first and foremost, what's the vibe like in the old great state of Texas after everything that's gone on in the last 2 weeks?
I get my back adjustments from a former UT offensive tackle who played in the NFL for a few years by the name of Jay Humphrey. There's no secret there. He's a great guy, a huge human being, like 6'7", 340 pounds. You know, and we've had some great conversations there about, you know, UT and NOU kind of breaking off and doing their thing. And I think that number one, I think that, you know, people, you know, understand here that the Big 12 isn't what the Big 12 was really kind of cracked up to be. Although I don't think that Texas has done a great job of overwhelmingly just kind of like throwing down and being a dominant force there. I mean, they've gotten beat a number of times by teams other than that aren't named Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where I think obviously that, you know, they're going to a place that's going to be infinitely tougher to assert yourself and get into that, you know, find a way to get into the championship game each and every year. So I think that they realize that. I know that they think it's a little bit of a power grab. Obviously, NIL is fueling it a little bit more. I think that the pending, you know, CBS contract coming to an end, you know, and having the new TV contract be rewritten and how much that's going to be worth, that's absolutely part of this deal too. So there's a moneymaker deal thing. And I think the other thing that was interesting in my conversation with him yesterday, you know, I think I kind of saw a future at some point down the line where mm-hmm. the NCAA was no more. I want to say it's probably 3 years, maybe 5 years out. Maybe might even be sooner than that. I don't think we're talking about the NCAA anymore, at least with, you know, college football, you know, it doesn't seem to be marching to that step there. I think they're going to go right around those guys, and it's going to be meaningless to have them be part of that basically – any type of control at all that the NCAA is providing, I don't think there's any value at.
Especially when you hear the projected figure. If Oklahoma and Texas are in the SEC in 24-25, that league of 16 teams would generate $1.3 billion, basically generating more revenue than the NCAA. When that happens, yeah. Then the scenario you just laid out about the NCAA probably happens.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that's, you know, you basically conceding your power. You're becoming less powerful in full governance over the 16 team, you know, super conferences to where you get a mega conference now, and you start talking, you know, you're out to including now UT Oklahoma, you know, maybe even now that we're starting to look down the road a little bit further about the ACC, what happens if a Clemson Florida State decides to slide over? And what happens really at that point? So I think, honestly, that you've got two things kind of going on. You've got the movement that's happening over there that with the possibility that they now are in more power, essentially, than the NCAA is over them. And then you also have the Big Ten. And what is the Big Ten doing? Are you playing checkers to chess? Or at some point, are you going to start playing the same game? Because I don't think anybody is really comfortable in basically losing by not putting up a fight. And that's really what seems to be kind of happening right now.
So how will this impact recruiting for Texas A&M, Texas, Oklahoma in the state of Texas. And what about those other key programs that do pretty well in the state of Texas, i.e. Ohio State?
Yeah, you know, and that's an interesting point because there were players that were very, they had this need to go play in the SEC, and that was the draw then of a Texas A&M, and that's what gave them the in of the Missouris and the LSUs and the Arkansas, those bordering states, to be able to kind of dip in and say, hey, we play in the SEC, not in the Big 12. How does that sound? You know, mm-hmm. and obviously Texas has, you know, those top 35, 50 guys that basically everybody's in on. They're getting recruited by the Pac-12, the Big 10, the ACC, as well as the SEC. So, and it's just, I think here though, now, you've always had kind of that agreement, that gentleman's agreement, kind of between A&M and Texas, that if either one of those two schools wanted a guy, they wanted to keep them in state, and if they mm-hmm. and if they couldn't get the guy, they wanted to make sure that they were staying in state, so they were pushing them to the other school because they didn't want those guys to keep leaving state. I think mm-hmm. that there are those little gentleman agreements still that are kind of going to be interesting to see if they still exist. I don't know if they really existed too much, you know, prior to A&M leaving the Big 12 the first time. But now, you know, what happens when you get a second SEC team in the, you know, south of the Red River, and also then that can carry into Oklahoma? Because I think now Oklahoma and UT and A&M got a lot of similarities when it comes to recruiting the Lone Star State, which they do. And I think then you also have some schools that would be more interested in coming over and capturing the state of Texas, because now they have more of a relevance, because they can tell a mom or a dad, hey, you know what, I'm going to play within 5 hours of where you live three times basically a year, you know, or every other season. So if you come to Nashville, if you mm-hmm. come to Athens, if you go to wherever. So there are absolutely some pluses here for some other schools to kind of view in coming to Texas.
As this all unfolds, and we've got, I think, the most monumental offseason in college athletics that we've ever had, from name, image, likeness to Supreme Court rulings to Oklahoma, Texas. I mean, the playoff expanding. Do you think now we've come to a point, even though not everybody is under the same umbrella, and, you know, each conference is kind of playing by their own rules, and the NCAA is in football, they just wash their hands and, like, we don't do anything with you. Have we come to a point, Brian, do you think that a commissioner would be is viable for college football, that this needs to happen?
Mm. That's a tremendous point. You know, the NCAA here, it's very laissez-faire. They are giving, they're being told that the power rests more with the teams and the players than it does with them as a controlling entity. So then all of a sudden, to your point, they still need somebody out there making those, working with basically the athletic directors and the institutions, the schools, whether or not that gets down to the head coaching levels, et cetera. There's a potential there for somebody who need to kind of be out in front of it all, you know, them playing the chess now for the people internally doing the things. And I think that also you need a person that's making sure and kind of overseeing it as kind of a checks and balances person, to make sure that there isn't somebody like a Vanderbilt that all of a sudden starts getting, you know, not getting basically the equal shares, or something else happening that's unfair to them, or, you know, you keep adding more and more teams, or mm-hmm. or maybe potentially there's a need to tell and work with the Big Ten commissioners, other conference commissioners, about what kind of the paths are to kind of get to these mega conferences now. And you know, and I think it's so interesting now, because obviously the ACC, Big Ten, and the Pac-12 have all kind of stood pat. And you've got Notre Dame, obviously, out there. I think it would be like a crown jewel, like if somebody could get them to join a conference, which I don't think that they ever would. But, you know, you've got some teams out in the ACC country. I think for the Big Ten to really can try to stay relevant here, they're going to have to attack the West Coast. They're going to have to go get some teams from that area, which makes it a basically a coast-to-coast conference now. And I don't know if that means a USC, UCLA, to where, you know, potentially you can grab a Colorado and extend your footprint basically from, like, Colorado over to New Jersey. And then can you get an Oregon at that point to kind of follow along? And then does an Oregon leave without an Oregon State, very similar to where, you know, the recent or any other conversation up to Oklahoma State and the Bedlam Bowl and stuff like that. So I think the commissioner is going to be something that we're going to have to start talking about, right, to kind of make sure that things are kind of staying in line, at least between the mega conferences.
Let's do a quick little hit here on recruiting. It's been since the middle of this month that Nebraska got a pickup in recruiting. Do you think anybody says yes to Nebraska, or there's any movement between now and 4 weeks from tomorrow?
You know, it's possible. I've talked to Nathan Vale a little bit, and Mike kind of mentioned him today in Tunnel Talk, and unfortunately I'm leaving out the door to go on a little short little trip here, and I wasn't able to get my Tunnel Talk in last night. But in talking to Nathan Vale this week, I don't think Nathan Vale is ready to do anything in the next 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. I really don't feel like that's going to happen. John Pastore? That's a possibility. I don't really know what's kind of keeping him back from either choosing Kansas State or Nebraska, unless he really feels like the lid is going to blow off on him come the season. I think Nebraska had done their homework. I think that they have found a guy. I think that that's kind of been verified through the other offers that he's kind of picked up. I think McCula ends up going to Stanford following his visit out there to Palo Alto. So I always kind of felt like McCula had been kind of waiting, you know, for something else to kind of happen. So that one kind of got verified. But I think there's a possibility with Pastore. I'm not necessarily convinced yet on Nathan Vale. But there are some guys, you know, that we're starting to talk about with, like, official visits. But that's again, out past the 4 weeks we're talking about in September.
Listening yesterday, and we all want to hear a sense of urgency, accountability. You're not going to know much until you get to play a football game 4 weeks from now. And when you're in that situation yesterday and you're asked questions, you tell people how you're feeling and what the goals are and the mindset. And I listened to younger guys and older guys on how they're approaching this upcoming season. I'm glad to hear the word winning. Winning is important. Winning is, you know, the ultimate scoreboard for this upcoming season. But I ask you, and I'm going to ask everybody else, how will this team win this year? How will they win football games this year, in your opinion?
They're going to have to. Well, there's a couple. There's three different areas. I'd say I'd pick out one on each side of the football. First of all, I need to start with special teams. Mm-hmm. Number one, special teams were not good last year. It cost them victories last year. It put them in bad positions, it seemed, all season long. If they can clean up that third of the game itself, they put themselves in a lot better positions, if not the win column, just outright. So I think that they're well on their way by bringing in Bill Bush. I think that they have found some other specialists, basically, that help things out. And then I think that when you start looking on the defensive side of the football, I think that you need to cause and create more turnovers. If there was one part in the defensive side of the football, you know, they started getting off the field on third down. They started making key stops. They need to create some more turnovers. But then on the other side of the football, the offense can't turn the football over. And that is really, to me, where I think the biggest fault still lies, is where you either got interceptions or fumbles or whatever. I think also when you start to read, you know, and listen to the comments of Martinez yesterday, where he says, I got to go out and I got to prove it. Mm-hmm. He needs help. He needs a lot of help. And when people say, well, does that fall on the offensive line? Does it fall on the wide receivers? Does it fall on the tight ends? Does it fall on the running backs? My answer to that question is yes, it falls on every single one of those. Everybody has to play a role in the success of the quarterback and the offensive side of football. There has to be an identity running the football. I think that those guys feel challenged based on the words that I heard coming out of their mouths, you know, from their statements, and that's great. I think it's good to have a chip on your shoulder, and I think that, you know, the offensive line, they're better. I think we're start talking about a two deep. I think we feel like there's a lot of potential in the wide receiver room. And I think that undoubtedly the deepest room on the team is in the tight end room. So I think there's a lot of tools on the offense, but they've got to put it together and they've got to do it all at the right times. And I think part of that is play calling. I think part of that is just not turning the football over at some of those times that they've chosen or had to or done before in the past.
How do you think this offense will evolve?
Well, that's another question that I've asked myself. I really liked the little short quarterback draws and keeping the defense off balance. And I think that's boring a lot to people, but I think it opens up a lot of other things around them. I think it creates intermediate routes. It opens up the intermediate routes behind the middle linebackers and the tight end. I think it also gives you that ability to keep those guys, in a little bit closer line of scrimmage and linebackers and allow some things to kind of open up different edges and different places. But I think Nebraska has to be effective throwing the football down the field. It just seems like there was a hesitation about it. There was a lack of comfort where it came to people like wanting to challenge that. I think that they have some really nice weapons now when it comes to being able to do that. Plus, they have the guys that they can put into the tight little spaces, like the little slip screens, little bubble screens, et cetera, and allow them to kind of go ahead and challenge the edges of the football field and do some things from a mismatch perspective. But I think that you really start to talk about the need to kind of create a little bit differently within the quarterback running side of the game and be able to challenge the field vertically.
Hey, part of that offense, and I think if Adrian walked in his first year and he was blessed to have Stanley Morgan, and then he had J.D. Spielman, and then Divine Azigbo got his opportunity and took advantage of it. So there was a lot of things taken off the plate of Adrian, and I think he was at a better comfort level walking in the door with the weapons he had around him. And then it's been kind of a hodgepodge of who's going to play, who's in and out of the lineup for the next 2 years. We get to this year, and I look at what the wide receivers could be. The running back is still a mystery, but, gosh, you'd have to think they're going to be able to find a couple of reliable guys. You've got a deep room of tight ends. You've got a more experienced offensive line. I mean, it's just adding up to why I think Adrian's confident and comfortable with himself and the team around him. But going back, Matt Lubick was on the network talk show the other night. He's got a deep wide receiver room. Probably, and I ask you this from the recruiting angle because these are the guys that you most recently talked to when they signed with Nebraska. Probably didn't surprise you that much that he was talking about the young wide receivers that have just arrived, that they all could come in and find a way onto the field this year.
I think we all would agree that Latrell Neville, he looked the part in the pictures, and I think that he's really put himself to work. But I think that one guy that really got missed a lot last year when it comes to the recruiting class was Kamonte Grimes.
Yes.
Grimes is a big dude. I mean, he was 6'3", 200-ish going into his senior year. He committed to Nebraska in August, so you kind of took him out of play very, very early. And this was a guy that was really, Gainesville, Florida, they were really kind of playing with him a little bit, dangling an offer. We're talking about literally like a millimeter away from getting a significant SEC offer to stay home in Florida. So that's that type of guy. And he was getting recruited by Ohio State too. So Grimes is a guy, Neville, Nebraska flip from Virginia Tech. So there's been some success there, but another guy that gets overlooked because of when he committed, he's an incredibly intelligent kid, and I would lose my bearings on how old he was talking to him, Sean Hardy. Yeah. Sean Hardy is another big body guy that gets lost in a room now, a big body guy, as when you start talking about Grimes being 200, and Neville being 6'4". Here comes Hardy walking through the door at 6'3", 190. And it's just... That's the kind of that was really necessary for, I think, Nebraska to address the physical side of the position, because I felt like they had gone after some quicker guys and some faster guys, and they had kind of lost this. Well, we're still playing in the Big Ten, and there's still a need going back to the old Ron Brown days. If you're gonna play wide receiver at Nebraska, you got to go block, and they're gonna have to. So they're getting some of those guys back, and those guys are still some tremendous playmakers when it comes to being the wide receiver and having that length and that size.
How do you think the running back room is taking the outside perception of, oh, well, they don't have a number one? Don't know. They're the question mark on this offense. How do you think that's being received by those guys that are in that room?
It's a challenge, and it's working. You know, I think Nebraska, I think the guys there in the room have heard the noise, and it's upsetting. And I know that, you know, Marquis Stepp didn't come to Nebraska with the hopes that he was going to have a foot injury and be battling this thing and not be that bell cow guy that people are talking about that doesn't exist there right now. And I think that he's getting healthier. You know, start talking about Yanton and Irvin and Morrison and Johnson and Scott and so on. I mean, heck, there's six guys right there I just rattled off.
Yep.
And they're incredibly talented players. It's just, you know, Steph's got some D1 experience and Scott's got some playing time. And outside of that, there really is a whole big bag of nothing. So if it's really the difference, the line between having a guy is having experience, then Nebraska needs to get some guys some experience quick and figure out what they've got there. So I imagine you're going to see a good dose of trying to figure out what's going on in that room and which guys are really going to play a factor here early on in the month of September.
So an interesting thing on that position is Scott said he would like, and then there's other positions. The one thing about this team is there's not a lot of open jobs. Yeah, every job's up for grabs, but essentially there's not a lot of jobs that are open. But running back is wide open. But he said we want those jobs to be decided earlier than later in camp so everybody can be together and you can develop some cohesiveness. So with that said, does that by maybe default, and that isn't a negative when I say default, I'm using it as he was the lead guy in the spring. Doesn't that make Gabe Irvin the clubhouse leader at the running back spot?
I think it does, but I think I'd keep an eye on Steph and keep an eye on Yant. And I don't think I'd necessarily rule anybody out, but I think you have to have an idea of what it's going to look like, because there's going to be a first rep come fall camp, and it's significant about who the ball goes to in that first rep. You know, I mean, because you have to start building a chemistry immediately. And then if the chemistry isn't working, you have to diagnose that and move the ball into the hands of somebody else to figure out if the chemistry is there with somebody else. So I think it is Gabe Irvin that's kind of sitting there right now as that number one guy. But Step, because of the injury, because of kind of being banged up, if he's back to being healthy, he can get out there on the very first day. He's got a chance to go ahead and just take that thing right back and say, you know, I know that you were there and you helped me out in the spring and you helped the team out, but let me help us get into the end of the season. But it's going to take everybody. It's going to take more than just me to go ahead and get us through it all, because it's a long season, especially in the Big Ten.
We've seen a wide range of, let's just call them I-backs, at Nebraska, from what kind of a size, some bigger, durable running backs to some sleeker ones. We've seen the Imani Crosses that are at 240. Nebraska now has a running back. I bet Yant is 245, 250. He is a large human being. Do you think that he's a number one running back?
You can't sit here and ever say that because that guy looks this way, he can't be that. And I think what they have to do is be confident in him and the things it is that he can do well, and figure out in the game plan, you know, whether or not that makes sense. I think that all those guys are going to have strengths. I think they're all going to have some weaknesses, you know, and it's not like Nebraska hasn't seen the bigger back. Divine Ozigbo wasn't as big as him. He wasn't a small back either. You mentioned Imani Cross. I'll bring up Dan Alexander. Dan Alexander is a big guy, was still probably the fastest guy when it came to being on the offensive side of the football. So while Yant doesn't have Alexander's speed, and I think that we would agree that Divine Ozigbo is probably one of the more balanced running backs that we've seen, you know, come through Lincoln in a while, I don't think Yant is that either. He's going to have an absolute wheelhouse, whether it's, you know, between the tackles or doing these other little things that he can do. I think that Yant's going to have a role to play in that offense, whether it's going to be as a starting running back, a short yardage guy, a third down guy, etc. But and or just a guy that they're going to bring in as a change of pace guy to say, we need to tire down that defense a little bit. We're going to go right at him and hit him in the mouth.
I'm glad you brought up Dan Alexander, because he was 6'2", 245. I mean, he was a little fire hydrant. There will come a point in Yant's career that he'll show up on SportsCenter by trucking somebody. He is going to make somebody a highlight film by running them over. He is just a large person who runs very fast, which is exciting. I'll be curious to see where his, you know, how soon he carries the football when we get 4 weeks from Saturday. Brian, as always, I appreciate it, your time. I know you guys are busy now that camp is open and everything else going on. So, as always, we appreciate your contributions to Football Friday.
Be safe. Talk to you next week.
That's Brian Munson from Husker Online. Yan is all of 250. I haven't looked at the roster. I don't know what he's officially listed at. But that room has probably got a little chip on their shoulder. Probably their position coach as well. But they could fall under the prove-it category. I think Step is one, or Irvin is one. I think Step, if he's healthy, finds a way into the top three. And then maybe there is Yant. Everybody would like to have a number one. I think that's important to find a true number one that breaks away from the pack and that reminds you about running backs, special running backs that have played at Nebraska instead of a running back by committee. But if they're going with an early decision, number 22, who had a nice spring, didn't get to see him in the spring game, but had a nice spring and took advantage of his opportunities, I would think he's sitting in the clubhouse with the lead. He would be the guy that I look at and go, okay, Nebraska's got a running back that looks familiar. I mean, there's too many spaces between the Halus and Burkheads and Amirs of late, not having that number one guy that, if you need be, can get you 20, 25, maybe even 30 carries a game. All right, Brian Christopherson to come before the hour is over. Dan Lust, sports and entertainment attorney. Lots of stuff going on in his world pertaining to college athletics, and he's got some things with the Big 12 and how it ties in with Nebraska. Dan will join us coming up at noon. Dirk Chatelain stops by at 1. It's Gary Sharp Show with George on 1620 The Zone.